Now, back to the Morning Machine on 102.6, The Situation.
Yep, that's right. At 36 past the hour, the Morning Machine, the machine that makes your boy this move. Y'all all right over there? Y'all good? But anyway, what did you do? See what's going on live radio? They're cutting up already. Oh my goodness. That's so funny. That is so funny. Only in live radio. This is what happens. I love black love, you know what I mean? Because it's just so amazing just to see them cutting up right here in the studio. But before I know you hear them. But let me make sure I introduce our guests right, because they were cutting up just a second ago. You know what? That's how much fun you can have in here when you come into our studio. But anyway, our special guest this morning, understandably, first of all, unapologetically black-owned, black-operated, they are the pioneers, and they are pioneering esports education. They are providing youth the opportunity and the education to really get into the business of esports. Understand, esports is a booming industry right now and continues to grow, especially in the midst of everything that we're going through with a pandemic. So it has really blossomed into a major, major thing. Esports has been around, but now it's really, really building. And now it's time to get the education on it. And by the way, speaking of that, they're also building something super dope on the other side of this building. And I'm going to have them talk about it in more detail in case you missed the announcement. So I'm not going to give it away. I'm going to let my guests talk about it. I'm going to welcome for the first time to our station, 102.6 The Situation, a big Morning Machine. Welcome to Eric and Jaquita Thomas. Good morning.
Hello, everyone.
And they are with Pharaoh's Conclave. They are developing some esports education going on around here. Boom.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. So, first of all, before we get into the major announcements that have been going on regarding esports and all here at Morris Brown College, I want to talk about the journey. What made you all get into esports?
Yeah, so Eric and I are both gamers. We've been gamers since we were kids, you know, playing the super old school games. Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? Ooh. The Oregon Trail.
Not the Oregon Trail,
Pitfall,
are you serious?
Frogger. Yeah, really, really old school. I know we're dating ourselves, but you know. And so our love for gaming, as well as our love for education, Eric and I are also both educators, Eric in math and science. Nice. At the middle school, high school levels, and me in higher ed and computer science. It led us to want to marry gaming with education. Now, we were watching an episode of Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel some years back, and mm-hmm. in that episode, he was talking about the first scholarships that were being made available in esports. But when we started right. to sort of look around Atlanta, where we're from, we're true yeah. AT aliens, we didn't mm-hmm. see, you know, we didn't see people who looked like us functioning at the highest levels. Right. We didn't see that support. Young people weren't clear about how to get into esports as an industry. They weren't even aware that there were all these careers that exist within esports, just like what exists in traditional sports besides playing professionally. They couldn't figure out how to navigate through. And it's important for our community, especially, to be a part of this really vibrant, lucrative industry, because yes. there are so many opportunities, and those opportunities and those career pathways not only allow young people to marry passion and purpose, but it also is a stepping stone for our community to be able to build generational wealth, because these jobs and careers pay very well. So we started Pharaoh's Conclave to be able to prepare young people, black and brown youth, to take advantage of these esports careers and to prepare themselves to enter into this really amazing industry.
Yeah, it is an amazing industry, because we've been playing games for X amount of years. Right. Like I heard someone mention in the at the ceremony, Duck Hunt. I'm like, yeah. wow, you went all the way back to Duck Hunt.
Oh yeah.
I'm taking it back to the original Mario Brothers, Mario Kart, The last gaming system I had was Sega Dreamcast.
Oh, yeah.
That was way back late 90s. I had Soul Calibur.
Oh, yeah.
I played that game faithfully. Soul Calibur. But see, the gaming industry has been around for ages.
Yes.
And, you know, the level of competition these days, now we have esports leagues and, you know, just the involvement of esports over time is just simply amazing. But how did Pharaoh's Conclave specifically come into the fold as it pertains to esports? Talk about that journey.
So when we talk about the journey, you know, we always want to acknowledge the pioneers and the trailblazers that have come before us. So in the 70s, a man by the name of Gerald Lawson, or Jerry Lawson as he was known in the industry, was the first to design and build and sell a console for video gaming that allowed you to interchange the cartridges. So it had interchangeable cartridges. That piece of technology is what esports now stands upon.
Yep.
When video games were first being invented, these were standalone systems. So if you wanted a different video game, you had to buy a whole nother system in order to employ the video game.
Yep.
And this was before Atari.
Yep.
So he created a machine. It was the Channel F, the Fairchild Channel F. F stood for fun. And this machine allowed you to take cartridges that had the game, the developed game memory, and you could put it in just like regular cartridges. I know if you had a Sega or a Nintendo, you were used to blowing out your cartridges to make sure you could see motherboard coming out of the cartridge. And this is what it was. And so he doing that, he allowed people to bring video games into their homes more effectively.
Right.
And so that was the start of things. And this was done then. So we met his son and his daughter. We interviewed them this past summer, Anderson and Karen Lawson, and they have a foundation for their father, in honor of their father. And so even from that, we're standing on his shoulders. And so again, we wanted to build legacy, same as what he started, allowing young people that look like us to be able to take part in an industry that doesn't look like them.
Yeah.
Woo! And you say that for the people in the back. Good gracious.
FUBU. At the end of the day, for us, by us, original FUBU. So, and we wanted to make sure we were making that statement for them. And as an educator, I would work with my young people, my students, and, you know, even as a youth minister, we'd talk to them and you're like, what do you want to be when you grew up? I remember people coming in, you know, officer friendly and all kind of stuff. And they would ask us, what do we want to be when you grow up? And we would yell out astronaut and doctor. Right. But for some strange reason, it got to the point where I would ask the same questions to young people and I would get crickets. They wouldn't say anything. And so we were like, okay, what can we do to inspire these young people to start to dream big? And it was more so, Jaquita said it, and it's, you can't be what you can't see. So we were like, okay,
that's true.
We're going to make it. We're going to make it an opportunity for them to see what we would like for them to be, or even just understand what you can be. And at that point, you know, it was just no brainer. We had to start Pharaoh's Conclave from an educational aspect of it, because everybody was on the shiny competitive video game side of esports and, you know, all these different things, money. But it was okay. Well, where are the next generation going to come from? And so we were like, hey, we're going to start the school, which we call Leveled Up Academy, is where we started. But then we had have an esports league, and then we also have an apprenticeship program.
Oh,
because
wow.
I remember growing up, you know, being apprenticed in a bunch of different things at the church, or in the community, even in Boy Scouts, you know, just a bunch. If I really wanted to do something, there was someone who would show me how to do it. Even my uncle, and his father owned a convenience store. So I was stocking shelves, running cash register at an early age. But he was also an auto mechanic. So, you know, I was apprenticing under him. And he was also a photographer. He started his own company, Shots Out to Photography by Walter.
Nice.
And they did all of the school photography for Atlanta Public Schools. But and so I started even in photography there, and just seeing how he would work and how he would just make a way. And so whenever I had an idea, his quote to me was, if you want to do it, you can try to partner. But if nobody wants to partner with you, just figure out how to do it on your own.
Hmm.
And so at that point, and, you know, we were off to the races, and we said the same thing when it came to video games and esports with Pharaoh's Conclave. It's not there, so we're going to have to make our own.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. I had to drop a bomb to that because something. Your journey is exactly where I was in 2015. How can I elevate this? What is needed? What's the temperature from the people? From the people that listen to music. What do they want? And you know, when you give them what they want, they support big.
Absolutely.
And esports is something that was needed to inspire our youth, and which leads me into this question: what is the most inspirational moment that you've had to date with one of the youth?
So it actually happened in our summer camp. We pivoted, as most everybody did, in the spring of 2020 when the pandemic hit and disrupted, you know, life as we formerly knew it. And so we actually decided to start a virtual, 100% virtual summer experience called Camp Level Up. And we ran it from June through July. And we had three tracks. We had the Pro Gamer Clinic, comic book creation, and game design and development. And on Friday, we would bring the entire camp together to learn from different professionals in various areas and segments of esports. So we would have professional comic book creators, professional game developers, indie game developers, professional players, shoutcasters, the whole gamut. And everyone who came into the space, for the most part, was a person of color, was black or brown. And so we had the gaming team, the professional gaming team based out of Johannesburg, South Africa, Goliath Gaming, come to talk to our young people, to talk to the camp. And we asked them about, you know, their regimen, the practices that they do, how they go about moving throughout their day, their nutrition, so on and so forth. And at the end, after the fireside chat, or the we called them Friday features. After the Friday feature, we had a debrief with one of the kids who was in the with the entire group of kids who were in the Pro Gamer Clinic, because that particular guest was specifically geared for them. And one of the young people said, the coolest thing about this whole day is that I learned that the things that we're doing every day in this camp are exactly what professional gamers do. Mm-hmm. And we started to see their mindset shift and their paradigm shift. And they began to think of themselves as pro gamers. One of them even said in their survey, you know, I realized through this experience that I have what it takes to be a pro gamer. I am a pro gamer. So to see that kind of a mindset shift from, you know, well, maybe black people do gaming, maybe they don't, maybe they're pro gamers, maybe they're not, to, okay, well, black people are pro gamers, to then, therefore, I am a pro gamer. That is a profound shift that can transform the trajectory of a young person's life. And to see that moment happen, like in real time, was very emotional, and it was very inspiring.
Yeah, I could definitely see that, because even it tournaments are not just Madden tournaments. You know, you wouldn't, when you were doing Madden tournaments and NBA Live 95 and all of that, back in those days, you didn't think of it as professional competitive gaming. It has always been competitive gaming. Right. If you had two controllers, it was a competition. It was a tournament.
Right.
But it didn't become an industry in that time. It was still an industry, but it wasn't known as esports. Mm-hmm.
No, it wasn't. It was, and you know, if you go back to the arcades, you know, most of the competitions that I was a part of and I would watch would be in the arcades. And, you know, shouts out to Gold Mine over at South DeKalb Mall.
Ah.
You know, we would always get on the sticks and we would play or watch someone play over and over again at the different various arcades around the city. But, you know, we may not think that, you know, esports as it currently is was non-existent. However, in the wars, in the console wars, if you will, when, you know, it was Sega Genesis versus, you know, Super Nintendo and so on, they were already doing competitions. They were doing massive competitions around the country to find out who was the best at Super Mario Brothers or who was the best at Sonic the Hedgehog. Or what, and so they were already doing it. It was huge. It was huge, huge, huge business that was going on. However, you wouldn't necessarily see people of color as a part of what they were doing, even when they had the marketing that was going on. And I'll say this really quickly. Okay. When we explain esports, we always use this analogy. If you look at NBA, Major League Baseball, or the NFL, you look at the product that's on the field, think about all the things that it took for that to happen.
Right.
All of the careers, all of the behind the scenes, that same ecosystem exists in esports.
Yes.
So massive dollars that are thrown around to do that for those traditional professional sports are the same dollars, and even more so, with video games.
One of the things I think that's really amazing, and another reason why it's imperative that our community is involved in esports, is that 73% of Black and brown youth game, they consume games. But when you look at the workforce that is producing those games, Black and brown people make up less than 5% of that workforce, right? So that disparity is, it's incredible. And even when you look at, the dollar spend in video gaming, we are, as a community, spending most of the dollars. Like, it's not even close how much money we're spending within this industry, but we also need to be producers within this industry, creators within this industry, innovators within this industry. And so Pharaoh's Conclave was really developed to show young people the way to tap into that.
Oh my goodness, this is so nice. This is so nice. Hey, you know what? Back in the day, they should have signed me up for Mario Kart. They should have signed me up for Mario Kart. My cousins always told me over the years, even my younger brother, like, man, you would always want to play Mario Kart. He would always beat me. You know why? Because I played it every day enough to know the
exactly
and know exactly when to hit the turns and exactly when to throw the shell at you. You know, and throw the shell at you at the finish line.
Exactly, and that's an example of when we were in the pro player clinic. Those are the modules. Those are the things that we're talking about to be prepared. So yes, you're going to mentally prepare. So you have your meditations, your yoga. You're going to physically prepare with your your physical fitness. Okay. That you're going to do your nutrition, but you're also going to prepare yourself to be pro by practicing and learning how to track your KPIs, your key performance indicators. So we have kindergartners already tracking their key performance indicators. If we're talking about Rocket League, you know, the number of goals they score, the defense, the assists, if it's in NBA 2K or Madden or any of the games. Wow. So whatever you have to track in order to win or to become better, they're tracking that, they're graphing that, they're interpreting based on their graph what it means, what they need to work on. So we are literally film study. Just like they do at the pro level, these young people are doing as well. And that gets, and see, we're educators at heart. Yeah. So then that gets you into math. That gets you into the economics. That gets you into really being able to critically think and problem solve to get you from point A to point B.
Exactly.
And so young people are doing that. They can do it. They've already been doing it, but they don't realize they're doing it.
And they don't necessarily have the tools and the language to call it what it is and name what it is.
Exactly.
When we think of esports from an educational perspective, it's very clear to us that esports is a STEAM and computing field. It sits squarely in there, not only from the competitive play, but when you think about, as Eric said, that entire ecosystem that sits around it. If you don't have games, if nobody's developing games, there are no games to compete on, right? So game development, which builds critical thinking skills and builds algorithmic thinking and problem solving and programming. It is, esports as an industry is a STEAM and computing industry.
Graphic arts, music.
Law. Wow.
Finance, business, marketing, like you even so traditional tech pathways, but then the things that support the tech pathways. A lot of these companies need a company is a company. And so if you're the techie person, as I like to say, then there's a place for you. But if you're the creative, there's a place for you. And if you're the business mind, if you're the guru, there's a place for you as well. So there are so many different pathways. And we are partnering with schools in order to do that here at Morris Brown College
and organizations
and organizations around Atlanta, Georgia. There are over 100 gaming organizations here in Atlanta, Georgia.
Right.
So, we know we're in Georgia more more broadly, but then also Southern University Law Center at that law school.
Wow.
So professional opportunities as well for you to go into around IP law, around contracts and management. There's so many things you can do. So you don't have to just be that techie person. And that's okay.
Shout out to the techie people.
Out to the techie. Yeah. See, I married a techie person, so I didn't have to be the techie person.
Yeah.
I'm more of the idea guy.
We got a techie person of our own that just arrived. That's why that door is closed. But anyway, y'all meet her in a minute. But we're going to continue to talk about esports. Of course, y'all going to be with us through the rest of the show, so we got a lot of time. We're taking our time through this interview because there's a lot to she would pop her head in. we're going to be talking only on live radio. But listen, first of all, we're going to be talking more esports. It's a lot to talk about, especially as it pertains to the development, the further development of our youth and our community, because we're seeing people like us that's doing it. Yeah. We're seeing people like us that's creating these platforms and avenues for us to become better people. And you could do it through esports.
Yep.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't even think about that.
Yeah.
And I thank you for bringing light to it. But we got more to talk about. We definitely have more to talk about. It is 3 minutes. 3 minutes till the top of the hour. And of course, we are going to be right back with Eric and Jaquita Thomas of Pharaoh's Conclave. It's the Morning Machine, y'all.
You're listening to The Morning Machine on 102.6, The Situation.
7 minutes, 7 minutes past the hour, The Morning Machine. The machine that makes your mornings move. And of course, see, they try. Why y'all trying to hold in your laughter? Don't hold in your laughter now.
Oh, man.
I mean, look, sometimes you got to segue with the music. You know, you got to do what you got to do. And it's important. Music is always important because sometimes when you game and music is important. When Absolutely. You have a groove.
Very, very important.
When you have a groove, that esports can get very interesting during a groove, especially when you're hearing your favorite song. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's called flow.
It's hype music.
Oh, yeah.
That's
flow.
Called flow.
Flow.
It's a phenomenon called flow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That phenomenon is something else, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Yeah.
You lose all track of time. And everything. It's sunny. Next thing you know, it's dark outside. And you've been playing all day.
Like, did I eat?
That sounds like a Fortnite game where you're being all day long. And before you know it, wait a minute, it's midnight?
Exactly.
I thought it was 8 o'clock. You didn't play it all day. You played 24 hours.
Yeah.
I mean,
listen.
But anyway, we are talking esports this morning on The Morning Machine with the owners, first of all, black owned, black operated, black founded by these two wonderful folks here. Look at that. They got spear fingers and all that. These are spear fingers. Jaquita and Eric Thomas. So wake up and Grand Rising, everyone. We're talking esports this morning. And they're actually doing something really big right here at Morris Brown College. Talk about that.
Yes, yes. We're super, super excited to be partnering with Morris Brown College. I don't know if you know this, but both Eric and I are children of alumni from MBC. My dad graduated in the mighty class of 76, and Eric's father, for whom the Esports Innovation Center is going to be named, is class of 2002. The vision of Dr. James is just incredible. Resetting Morris Brown, rethinking yes. Morris Brown, all of that. And the trajectory for this institution going forward in the future is going to be just, I mean, it's going to make history. It's already making history.
Yeah.
We're super excited to be partnering with Morris Brown around the establishment of the Ronald Floyd Thomas Center for Esports and Innovation. And it will be not only an esports arena that can support competitive play, but it will also be a learning space for young people to be able to prepare themselves for these vast careers that exist within the esports industry. So we're super, super excited about it. You know, both My father and Pop, as I called him, really loved Morris Brown, And so it was, of course, it was only right, actually, and felt really full circle for us to be able to partner along with the Thomas Family Fund to support this initiative in this way.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I remember that. That's familiar. That was homecoming. That was pocket change, wasn't it?
That was
yeah.
Eric.
Yeah. That for some reason, that was the... That was the talk of homecoming. Like, pocket change? Let me borrow about $5. I hit you back in about 6 months. I was like, what?
Yeah, that was kind of my way of just bringing a little comic relief to kind of the seriousness of what was actually happening at that time. Most of the time you hear in the, you know, in the news online about all these big companies, you know, right, donating all this money to HBCUs and small businesses. But when you peel back the layers, you don't really get to see and understand where that money went. And so what we wanted to do was be very intentional about the money that was being donated to Morris Brown. It wasn't coming from an outside company. Mm-hmm. It was coming from my family and it was coming from our business.
And it was coming from our community.
And our community.
That part.
And we're very transparent about what that money is going towards, not just, and so it was like we phased everything out. So phase one was the build out of the center. So we completely paid for everything that's going to happen in that renovation. That's completely paid for. We also started to design a degree program here at Morris Brown in esports management. We also started to see the scholarship fund as well, because we know and understand in our community, you know, some of the barriers that keep young people from going to college is the finances.
Yes.
And as I started in APS, when I moved back from California to Atlanta, I started with Atlanta Public Schools. I was working in their College and Career Readiness Project Grad is what we called it. And so I was a college readiness liaison. So the schools I had were Washington, Carver, and South Atlanta. And everything I would talk to the students about, let's take everything off the table to keep you from going to college. So let's not worry. Let's take care of school, so the grades aren't the part of the problem. Let's do what we need to do for the SAT. But now in COVID, SATs and ACTs, you don't even have to worry about that anymore.
Exactly.
But then it would always come down to finances. And so what I would talk to them about was, hey, let's try to get to school for free 99. So let's start. If we got one big scholarship, great. But if we got to accumulate multiple scholarships to get you down to zero, then that's what we're going to do. And so whenever we pull together any of these programs that we're working with, we're always thinking about, okay, let's take all the barriers off the table, because we need our young people to be able to have access to what we're doing. Yep. And so that's what we're doing. So now we're in phase two, where we're still raising money for the scholarships. We're also raising money for faculty lines as well, because, you know, you need to have the faculty. We're going to start teaching from the beginning, but we know we want to expand that out to more and more faculty, because we're already anticipating droves of young people coming to Morris Brown for this education. So we're going to need more instructors to be able to do this. And we're talking about top tier. We're talking about instructors that have industry experience, multiple years, decades, which is what we have. Also, we're talking about PhDs. So Jaquita's very modest, you know. And we're both graduates of HBCUs too, so we understand the culture and what's happening. So I graduated from Tuskegee University.
Oh, Tuskegee!
Yep, you know. And Jaquita,
I'm an alumna of Spelman College.
Yes. Okay, all
AUC
right,
love,
all
AUC right, love.
So we grew up around here. And,
my brother
and really,
was at Tuskegee, by the way. Yeah.
Oh, see, and he's a great man.
He's, matter of fact, he still lives in Tuskegee.
Oh, okay. That is awesome. Yeah. You know, we were actually there. We were looking at property, which is, again, another level to this, a layer to this, is that we want young people to understand generational wealth.
Yes.
And so to get there, it's about education. It's about property ownership. It's about starting your own businesses. There's a lot of different things that have to happen. And so we want to be the examples of that. We're leading by example. We're not saying, you know, we are asking for other companies to donate and get with us and pour into what we're doing. But we want to make sure we're showing them the example of how you do it. And that's kind of some of the parts that are missing and the pieces that are missing in what we're doing. So, that's always been part of our intentional nature in this business.
Interestingly enough, a lot of our youth these days want to see to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And when they see a person that looks like you and I pouring into their well-being and their education and their interests, oh yeah, they're in. They're locked in and ready to go. 150%, which is why you had the you all had the moment of inspiration where their paradigm just shifted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
their mindset Absolutely. Just became more locked in and focused on, hey, you know what? I didn't know what I wanted to do when I came in here, but you guys showed me another way, another path, what I can do as a career.
Exactly.
And now they're 1,000% in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
interested. It's not just, oh yeah, I'm in. I'm just doing to be doing it. Right. No, they are doing something that they love to do. And a lot of people, a vast majority of people, love video games.
Absolutely.
Exactly. They love video games.
Yep. And the amazing thing about it is once you get somebody locked in like that,
mm-hmm.
you can't stop them. Like, there's no stopping.
There's a passion.
Them. Yes.
There's passion, a passion.
Passion married to purpose.
Exactly.
I've talked to parents.
I like how she just plugged my brother's passion, purpose, coaching, kind of, sort of, you know. Shout out to the plug. Shout out to Coach Jarvis out there listening in. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Those are the exact conversations that we're having with parents. I was talking to a mother just yesterday. Shouts out to Miss Mays and her son Julian. You know, she was talking about, you know, my son has taken to video games in a way that she just couldn't really understand, but she knew she had to support.
Right.
And so she bought all the equipment that he needed, from a PC, gaming PC, to you know, his streaming equipment, mm-hmm. to his Xbox, everything he needed. And she challenged him. Well, okay, I see you on these video games every day. Well, you need to get into tournaments. And then he started to be in tournaments. And she was like, oh, okay. And, well, you're doing this. That's something else. You need to get on YouTube. I heard YouTube was a...
Yeah,
so he started his own channel.
You know, nudge the shoulder.
But to her amazement, you know, he took off. He's doing it on his own. And it's his passion. And so he's coming. He's now joined... Pharaoh's Conclave. He's a member of our Youth Esports League, and so he's going to be competing. He's going to be streaming. He's going to be doing all sorts of things, and we're going to nurture that. And he's only 14 years old.
Whoa. Turn all the music down. What age did you just say?
He is 14 years old. And so we have an 11-year-old, soon to be 12, on Friday. We have a 10-year-old. Oh, yeah, that is tomorrow. We have a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old. And we've started them early. So starting at kindergarten, they were already designing video games themselves, creating comic books, creating characters, 3D printing, starting their own companies. We challenged them. They used to watch YouTube with all of these different shows, the craziness. And as parents,
seeing other people do it.
Right, seeing other people. And as parents, we were like, well, y'all need to start y'all own. Not thinking that they were going to actually bring us to task. And they said, okay, let's do it. We want to do this. And so we were like, okay, well, let's dust off this equipment. Let's go. We're going to start yourself. So shout out to Black History Hunters.
Black History Hunters.
That's what they wanted to do. So they traveled around before COVID, of course, to various sites to talk about the Black history that was being made there, the people that made the history. And you know, I graduated from Mays High School. So we were always about learning about the trailblazers that not a lot of people would talk about. So of course you have your Martin Luther King Jr.'s, you know, you'd have your Harriet Tubman's, your Rosa Parks, and, you know, people that everybody knows. But then, you know, the real McCoy, you know, talking about Mr. Morgan, who did the Garrett Morgan, who did the traffic lights. Mm-hmm. So know, and the real McCoy, who did the coupling for trains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, just all of those different things, bringing those out and talking about that, because again, young people, so the narrative has always changed. We've been erased from a lot of narratives that we weren't a part of, you know, the building of this country. We weren't a part of the building of technology. Shouts out to Jared Lawson again. You know, when it comes to video games, we didn't, who built the GPS, Jaquita?
Oh, Lord, you're putting me on the spot.
I know, I'm putting you on the spot.
Let me tell you this much. It was a black woman.
Black woman built GPS.
Yeah.
She built GPS, and we're going to come back with her name. Because
Even though I'm owed 20% because I was the original GPS. No, I'm messing. No, my family would always go to me about, oh, what direction should we go for this? How should we get to here? And I would always have the photographic memory. Mm-hmm. But... you know, I'll let her have it. I'm a part of that Black history. No, I'm gonna stop.
Hidden Figures, we talk about it all the time.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, one of the things that I always say that was really compelling to me about Hidden Figures, a lot of people's minds were blown that Black women were involved in doing that, you know, super advanced mathematics to calculate these trajectories to the moon. I was not as surprised about that because I had been taught by some of those contemporaries in the mathematics department when I was at Spelman College, which is another amazing thing that HBCUs provide. You know, right. You get a chance to be taught by thought leaders and Black experts. But the thing that was surprising for me was when homegirl got on the bus after sneaking that book out and learned Fortran and taught all of those West Area computers how to program, so that Black women were some of the first programmers, because when you and computer scientists, because when you look at the statistics now and you listen to the narratives, it would be as if we were never there, right? And we're so quote unquote underrepresented, and you know, there are all types of stories and narratives that get told about why that is, mm-hmm. that place that blame on us, but the reality is we were there at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So I always say we are not hidden. We have always been here, right? It's just
actually you've been in the forefront, but they just didn't want to put you there.
Exactly.
And that's the reason why it's important that we tell our own stories
transparently.
Yes,
we have to. And we have to push all these young people and all of these trailblazers to the forefront so people can know who they are, see their faces, hear their voices before, you know, we're no longer able to meet them live. You know, give them their flowers while they're here. Exactly. We want to make sure we're doing that because the next generation is watching. And we feel really good about the next generation because they are problem solvers. They get in there and they're figuring things out. And so we have to capitalize on this moment right now, social justice, equity, all the things that are being said now that have come to light because we're shedding light on it because of technology. You know, we have to show how to use technology to continue to push that forward. So for us, it was always, what's the technology and the computing behind what it is you want to do for a career? And so understanding that. So when they're going in, they know not just how to be a personality on a radio show, but like yourself, they know how to run the equipment. They know how to bring in the sponsors, how to feature the sponsors, how to feature the interviews, how to put it in such a way that people are able to listen to it, digest it, use it in everyday life, and continue to move on and keep it pushing. So it goes beyond for us. It has always gone beyond video games.
Right.
It's about what's happening. What are we building for the future?
Absolutely.
First of all, you spoke of trailblazers. I consider you both to be trailblazers because of what you're doing and how you're reaching the people. How you reach the people, you can do whatever you want to, but it's how you reach the people in the manner that you reach the people that resonates in your legacy, and which is why I consider Pharaoh's Conclave to be a trailblazer in the esports industry, because you're doing something different, and our community would say the same thing. It's not just about seeing a person like ourselves doing this. It's more so about the nature in which you're teaching. You're teaching it from a life perspective. You're basically meeting the youth where they are.
Exactly. And it's about their interests. Like you said, and you said that earlier, you know, you don't want to just voluntold is what we talk about. So as a teacher, I was always
you don't want to feel forced. Right.
That's how they said it. So to not feel so bad. We were voluntold to do certain things in the classroom. And we were like, at the end of the day, we just want to teach. And so even for our students and our young people, because we were voluntold, we were basically voluntelling them what they needed to learn, how they needed to learn, and how they were going to build these awesome careers or go to these schools, and they were like, "That's not really not our interest." So, at the beginning of the STEAM movement, STEAM and STEM movement, when it was about computer programming, when it was about robotics, and really doing these first leagues and all these different things for the young people, they thought it was cool. But again, it wasn't necessarily their passion that they wanted to get behind. Now, when you fast forward and get into video games, this is purely squarely in their passion. When you talk about music, Mm-hmm. Music producing, it's in their passion. YouTube, they are digital natives. They were born into this. So that's nothing that they have to like, well, what is that? They've already been a part of that. It's hardwired in them. And so now that passion comes out and it's now I'm just facilitating. I'm just, hey, I'm coaching. I'm like, okay, that was great. So, you know, let's try this, you know, or did you think about this? And they're like, oh, okay, well, let me try. And so they're more open to learning. They're more open to just the possibilities that they weren't before when you just like code this, which is a bad word in our household, coding, you know, because that's more so. But we'll talk about that another time. but you know, build that robot. And it's like, okay, it's cool, but that's really not what I want to do.
And on top of that, how is that connected to making the world better? When you talk to Black people who are in STEM and STEAM and computing, especially when you talk to Black women and you ask them why they got into this field, it's always tied in some form or fashion to solving a problem that's going to make the world better for everyone. It's not just technology for the sake of technology or programming for the sake of programming. It has to be connected to making things better. So we always bring that social justice focus into whatever we do. For example, you know, our game design, they're not designing first person shooters. Oh, you know, there's a place for that, but that's not what they're designing. They're instead designing games for social change, thinking about what a community is, what their community is, looking at their community and saying, okay, how can I bring more awareness to things that are happening in my community? And how can I bring more action to change people's understanding of or behavior around what they think and how they know and how they interface with my community? And you know, I had to go find out the GPS. I had to do a little digging. I had to go back to the Book of Face to figure it out. So
the Book of Face. Wow.
So it was Mrs. Gladys West, and she was a part of the team that developed the global positioning system in the 1950s and 1960s at the Navy base at Dahlgren. She actually is a graduate of Virginia State College. It's now Virginia State University. It's an HBCU. She has a master's degree in mathematics. To my knowledge, she's still alive, and at 89 is currently working on a PhD at Virginia Tech. So she's soon to be Dr. West, and we're super excited to be able to feature women like her. And I can't let this opportunity pass to state that she's also a member of the Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. Shout out to all my lovely sorors.
Oh, good. Well, Mom, good morning. You got your shout out, Mom. Good morning.
Yes.
Exactly. And you know, and I just can't overstate it. It can't be overstated that the things that we're doing and that we're talking about and that we're wanting to bring forward are so needed right now. It is our time. When you look at a movement and you look at those who were active in the movement, pushing things forward, they were relatively young people.
Yeah.
They were in their teens to 20s and early 30s, moving through these movements and really getting them off the ground and running. So it's not going to be, we're both in our 40s now. So we can still make movements. We can make moves. We can keep pushing things forward, but to effectively continue putting it in a place where it can continue to grow and go is going to be the young people, the next generation. They're going to be the ones to continue to push it forward. You know, civil rights didn't get to its heights until the students started leaving the schools and getting arrested themselves. You know, and when they got involved, then it was like, okay, something is really going on here. And that forced people who were sitting on the sidelines, some of the older generation, to say, okay, we can't be outdone by our young people, our babies, so we have to get out there.
Right.
And we can't be scared to try to hold on to our little bit of position or power or in our fiefdoms. We've been working so hard to put a name for ourselves and our company. You have to just suspend that fear and get out there and do what you know needs to be done.
Yeah. And you have to partner too. That, you know, we're really excited about all of the partners that we have, many of whom in this industry are Black owned companies within this industry. So there's an entire ecosystem of Black owned companies in esports that a lot of people are not aware of and familiar with, but we partner with them because you can strike a much mightier blow with a fist when you come together than you can with individual fingers spread out. You can slap somebody good with individual fingers spread out, but you can really
knock somebody out.
Wait a minute, I had to let that marinate for a second. That was, you can slap somebody with an open hand and separate, but when you come together and bring that fist together, you can really knock out. Ooh. You know what, on that note, hold on, I need to take a break on that. That was a quote. That was a quote right there. I don't know how I can follow that, but I'm going to have to follow it up with a break. It's the Bottle of the Hour, the Boy, the Machine. We'll be back, y'all.
You're listening to The Morning Machine on 102.6, The Situation.
Yes, that's right. 34 past the hour in The Morning Machine, the machine that makes your mornings move. We are here. First of all, good morning to each and everybody listening in out there all across the nation, all across the world. First of all, I have to shout you out. First of all, our guests in the studio right now, Jaquita and Eric Thomas of Pharaoh's Conclave, black-owned and black-operated. Let me make sure I say that again. Black-owned and black-operated, unapologetically, yes. Pharaoh's Conclave, dealing with the education of esports and esports development. But also, it's a lot of gaming going on out here. And there's a news story that's been floating around recently about Chicago, carjackings. Mm-hmm. And Grand Theft Auto, which is a game that has been around for ages and ages and ages. Pretty much since I've been in high school, Grand Theft Auto has been out. Basically, since PlayStation has been out, yeah. There's been Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
So we've been seeing the game evolve year after year after year after year. And now these things are happening in real life in Chicago and other cities, and they're trying to blame it on the game. What is your take on that? Because I know you've been holding it in the whole interview, so I want you to go ahead and you have the floor. You can get it on out.
I'm going to let Jaquita start first while I take my breath and ease myself into this part.
You know, it's reminiscent of the mid to late 80s when there was a huge debate, and not necessarily a debate within our community, but certainly a debate amongst people outside of our community about the role that hip hop was playing in the breakdown of and influencing of black youth. And it mirrors a lot of those same types of conversation and discussion that's been happening. The reality from my perspective is that there are foundational issues that are at play in why we see the types of outcomes that we see that in this country in particular have been prevalent since, you know, as Cat Williams will say, pimping, been pimping, since been pimping, like forever, since 1619, if we want to be even more precise. And when you think about the impact of those, of racism, systemic racism, when you think about the impact of poverty, which is also impacted by racism, lack of access to resources, both in terms of material resources as well as economic resources, when you think about lack of access to healthcare, when you think about the condition of housing in which we live, all of those things come together to create a system and an environment that breeds certain ills that we see within the community. And so if you're focused on the video game that's been around for decades to as the rationale for why something is happening without also looking at the undergirding foundational issues that are at play, it becomes really problematic. Because if you take GTA away, you will still have this phenomenon. And then what?
What are they going to ask for at that point?
What's the excuse? You know, I mean, what's the reason at that point?
Spending all this time, you know, trying to figure out how to treat the symptoms and not looking at the cause of the sickness.
Right.
You know, if my children have a fever, sure, I could give them some Motrin, you know, to break the fever. But what's causing the fever? If it's a baby, maybe they're teething. So I need to work on that. Maybe they haven't eaten. Right. Maybe they have a cold. Maybe they have a virus. You know, the stuff that you're seeing that's happening, you know, that they like to call riots and things are just, you know, it's gotten to the point where things are spilling over.
Right.
So we have to relieve the pressure. But at the same time, we have to stop the fires that are creating the pressure, that are creating the steam, that is boiling the water to get to, you know, the pop out, you know, of the kettle whistling.
Right.
So, you know, what are we going to do there, and how are we going to do that? And I always talk about options. You know, we want our young people to go into these amazing fields. We want them to go to these schools. We want them to do all these different things. But what options are we really giving them in order to do that? Mm-hmm. You can't go to school unless tuition gets paid by somebody. You can't go into these fields unless they're getting the training in order for them to go into these fields.
Right.
You know, how can I worry about doing my homework as a child when I also have to worry about my brothers and sisters eating because my parents may have a job, may not have a job. They may be struggling as well. So, you know, I'm not performing to my high optimal levels in school because I'm doing all these other things that are really more important because they're my family. So I'm worried about that. I can't function in college because my parents are sick, or, you know, I have to work a job to provide, to pay the bills as well.
Right.
So what are we doing to give them options to allow them to be able to take advantage of these opportunities? You know, are we giving them stipends? Are we in some type of program that's giving them living assistance? There are so many different things. And then even when we start talk about that, you know, people say welfare, you know, all the black people on welfare. And that's not true.
No,
the majority of people on welfare in this country are white. And so, you know, it's funny how the narrative changes when you talk about a certain group of people.
Right.
From what it actually is. And so when we really start to have those conversations about what's really happening.
Right.
Then we can start to stem the tide on, you know, these flare ups that are happening because of the viruses or the sicknesses that are going on, that have been going on for a long time. And I'm a black man. So, you know, we have, you know, the issues like high blood pressure and diabetes.
Yeah.
But the things, not only is that genetic, but a lot of the things that we've done throughout our lives have contributed to that. So for all of my 42, soon to be 43 years of life, you know, I've eaten at McDonald's. I've done all of these crazy things. So it's not going to be a quick fix to make sure that I don't succumb to those diseases like hypertension and high blood pressure and all of those same things. But the sugar, as we like to call it in the community, we like to put the in front of, you know, whatever. But, you know, it's going to take a lot. And so if we want to stem the tide and change what's going on in our society, it's going to take a while. It's not going to be a quick fix, but we have to work on the root of the cause as opposed to just trying to put a Band-Aid over the flare-up.
And let me also add this, too, because I think that, you know, a common approach or a common request by those outside of our community is that we be burdened with fixing systems that we didn't create that, you know, don't operate, that never were designed with us in mind in the first place, right? So, you know, the burden of some of this work, some of it lies within our community, but by and large, when you talk about trying to break down systems, that's work that people outside of our community have to do because they're the people who built the systems, right? And the systems are functioning exactly as they were designed for that particular group of people. And that's where it's important that we start to have allies and allyship and co-conspirators, as I like to call them, in with us to break down some of these systems and barriers and reimagine a world that's more equitable and just, and that creates outcomes that work for everyone, right? So, you know, I often am hesitant to talk about, you know, the responsibility of the black community. So, like, for instance, you know, black on black crime has nothing to do with police shooting unarmed black men, right? Those are two completely disparate issues, and one has nothing to do with the other, but we create causation where there may only be correlation, right? And we don't often think about the fact that we're sitting inside of a system that is playing out that was designed before any of us were here. And it's our responsibility as a community to point out and apply pressure to say, look, these are the outcomes of what happens when we have to interface with this system. And so this system has to be changed, but it's up to you, local official, national official, governor, mayor, so on and so forth. It's up to you to pull the levers that you have at your avail to help us create and imagine and build new, more equitable structures.
Mayor Jackson, I can look back to some of his policies. When it was his policy that if you wanted to have a contract in the city of Atlanta to build or to service some part of Atlanta, you had to engage a black owned company. And if those contracts weren't going to black owned companies, then you couldn't get the contract either. So if you were, so it was, you had to be intentional about what you were doing.
Yeah.
And then they want to, then, you know, you get the affirmative action.
Isn't that what built the that's what built the airport the way it is right now.
Exactly. So, so, and interestingly enough with that, you know, there were still, you know, it's, it could be better with the it could be better. However, but with the construction, the substructure of the airport, all of that came about because they had to interface with black companies in order to get that construction done. And so that was powerful. And it also, it helped Atlanta to be what Atlanta is.
Right.
You know, there's, and people think if you do that, if you try to even the playing field, then somebody's going to lose out. You know, other communities are going to lose out, but that's not the case.
No.
If everybody works together, rising tides raise all ships. So everybody can work together, and there's enough for everybody. It's that fist.
Yeah.
So if the communities all would come together in order to, you know, push forward, we would be so much farther, further along than we are right now. We're talking about esports now. You know, if we look at places like Korea, they were doing this 40 years ago. They were already doing this. Japan, you know, China. This is nothing new for them.
Right.
They were already doing this. And that's why a lot of our, you know, a lot of that manufacturing and a lot of that tech innovation comes out of those areas, because they were already doing it. They were already working as a country or a set of countries or continents even to push those things forward.
Yeah.
And they didn't do it the best way either. They could have, that could have been some things they could have done better as well. But, you know, they looked at it as a national thing that needed to be pushed forward. We used to do that here in America somewhat as well. When it came to the space race, that was a national initiative.
Yeah, exactly.
And you see all the technologies that came out of that, you know, from, you know, from the computers down to Velcro.
Yeah,
I mean, all of that stuff came out of wanting to push forward as a nation, and there were still things that could have been done better there as well. But that's we're no longer doing that. It was a collective, and and I don't know if we're still in that collective mode of thinking right now. I think we're trying to get to that and stay there, but we definitely moved away from those because we're no longer performing at the heights in math and science that we were during those times.
I mean, across the board. We'd have to have a whole other, you know, whole situation to get into the
whole
history
show
of why that happened specifically within our community and the roots of that. The one thing I will say is that, you know, in this moment, our community definitely is becoming even more of a collective, right? We're rallying behind not dying at the hands of people who are supposed to be protecting us. And that's, you know, that's, so that's something that's bringing us together. Now, whether the country as a whole is more collective, you know, remains to be seen. My hope and my desire is that, you know, we take advantage of this moment to push not only for legislation, but we also push for economic justice. We push for a shift in the ways in which the United States understands what Black people have done from the beginning and how we continue to contribute to the development and the innovation that happens inside of this country. This moment, this pandemic created a moment for us to rethink and reimagine a lot of things.
And reset.
And reset. Come on now.
And reset.
Reset and rethink. And I hope that we as a community continue to keep the pressure on to ensure that that's exactly what happened.
We have to. We have to.
Wow. I got to say, you know, and here's the thing. For those out there who are just tuning in, you're late. But anyway, but for those who
but
are
you're here, in, but you're here,
but you're here. And that conversation is a conversation that every community should have.
Yes.
And you know, a lot of people don't. A lot of people ask me, "Can I say that on the radio?" Sure, you can. because it's black media.
Right.
Because this is the, we're not censoring what's going on in the community.
We can't censor anymore.
We can't do that.
Yeah.
We can't hold back. We've held back for way too long.
Exactly.
We've actually held a lot of our tongue for 400 plus years,
I'm
to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you.
So, I mean, is it a problem that we speak out? No. Mm-mm. It is not a problem that we speak out.
It's our duty.
We have to. If we're going to promote change and make this change happen, we have to speak out on it.
Absolutely.
You know, moms and grandmas used to say, if you want something, boy, speak up.
Oh,
speak
yeah.
up.
Oh, yeah. Closed mouths don't get fed.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Speak up. And you say something. Now we're saying something. Now we're saying something. And so that's basically where it is right now. And we're going to turn. You coming on the mic or what you got? You coming on the mic?
Yeah, peace and love, y'all.
Yeah. There he is.
Sorry, I'm late. Good to see y'all.
You're here. Like we were saying, you're here. And that's what we want. You know, it doesn't matter when you join the party. It's just the fact that you come to the party. And that's what we're telling our parents. That's what we're telling our students. That's what we're telling our, you know, sponsors. You know, it's time is now. And like you said earlier, you know, we've held our tongue long enough, mm-hmm. and we're in the time where we can speak out. I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with people in a position to make some change right now. And they're black people who are now being elevated to positions mm-hmm. where they can start to make some change in some of these companies, but they're scared. You mm-hmm. know, they're a little bit of timid and afraid to push forward and what needs to be done, because they don't want to, you know, they think they may lose their job. They may, you know, be, you know, supplanted or whatever. I don't know what the fear is, but if you can't talk out now, then you never going
to
be able to talk out.
It goes back to that system you were talking about. You know, mm-hmm. you just ignore the fact that it's a system put in place specifically, you know what I mean, to degrade or keep a people low.
Oh, yeah.
You just want to just, like, you know, not talk about that. I mean, people are even afraid to talk about that.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
What are you talking about? What system? What you mean, what system?
Yeah, exactly.
What you mean? So who taught us to hate ourselves?
Right.
Right.
We did.
We did?
Right.
Exactly. I don't think we did.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, right.
We did not.
I don't think I got that memo. What?
I don't remember that lesson from my mom.
That's what I'm saying.
So one last question, because I know it is 9 minutes before the top of the hour, before we, well, as we get into a great conversation and a powerful conversation, time always, right, you know, if time always runs out, but with 9 minutes till the top of the hour in the morning machine, how much, what can we do as a brand to help support Pharaoh's Conclave and
absolutely
your cause? Because everything that you have going is really trailblazing, and the fact that you're hitting HBCUs and you're deeply ingrained into the education of esports, however, not just the education of esports, but the education of youth yes. from a life standpoint mm-hmm, through mm-hmm. the vision of esports. So how can we as a brand support your brand even further?
Well, you're already doing it. This is an amazing platform that you have, and we appreciate you having us on for it. I have so many ideas about what can be done and how we can partner going forward that I'm excited to share and talk with you guys about and figure mm-hmm. out exactly how it can go forward. But we want to develop, we want to bring you certainly into our apprenticeship program. We mm-hmm. want to, there are opportunities for us to co-create pathways together. Mm-hmm. To engage more youth in this mm-hmm. space mm-hmm. as it functions within the esports industry. Like, there's so many ideas. So yeah. I'm really excited about what's going to happen going forward.
And so are we. And so are we.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah. By the way, shout out to Coach Jarvis for that question. You know, that's our third business partner.
Yes.
You know, he's behind the scenes, but, you know, he's not so behind the scenes. I'm bringing him to the forefront. I'm getting him there. He going to text me about that in a minute. Anyway, with that being said, But see, that's the love that we have. See, when you come in here, you're always welcome home.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You're always welcome home. That's the there go that text. I bet you I'm gonna read it and it's him. Target. I got a target. Yes. Spot on.
There it is.
I got it. Oh, target.
Yeah. And it's okay. You know, everybody you have your spokespeople and you have your people behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And so my father was, you know, he was one of those. He didn't say a lot, but he did a lot.
He did a lot. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and that's okay. We need both of those. Absolutely. And so we need a team that has, because we are at war on multiple fronts.
Absolutely.
And so we are fighting here. Absolutely. We need somebody fighting behind the scenes, down the street.
That's right.
Next door.
That's right.
And everything is in saying next door, we're going to be next door.
That's right.
So,
that's
we're going literally next door to you guys. So, you know, this is just, I don't know what's going to happen out of this, but it's going to be awesome.
I know, it's going to kaboom. Yeah. Going kaboom. That's what's going to happen. Yes.
But here's the thing. You spoke about the, you know, the, there's things that are spoken into, you know, existence. There's that spoken communication and that unspoken communication that speaks more volumes than anything.
Yeah,
because you said you made a point. You know, he didn't talk much, but he did a lot.
He did.
And so sometimes that unspoken way of doing things reaches the masses.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I was coming up, people used to say, "Don't talk about it, be about it."
That's right.
We still say that.
That's right.
We still say
stop
that.
Talking.
Yeah, talk is cheap. Just do it. Be about it. So, how can everybody find you, follow you, and get enrolled into some esports education?
Yeah. So they can hit us up at our website. We are at pcxnow.com.
Right now.
right now. And then you also can find us on the interwebs. We're on the Twitter at Pharaoh's Clave, and Pharaoh is spelled PHARAOH. Okay. So the ancient spelling. Pharaoh's Clave. We are on all the rest of the platforms at Pharaoh's Conclave.
Did you say the Twitter?
The Twitter.
The yes. Twitter.
And the Book of Faith.
You know, we're going to have Twitter. When we get on the line. Oh, man, this is so much fun.
Hey, of course. That's because you're home. You're in the building. You're home. That's what it is. We always have a homely environment. Yes. But it's also the energy, the level of energy that we have here at the station, but especially right here on the Morning Machine.
Yes. And Morning Machine.
Yeah, the machine that makes your mornings move. Prince, tell everybody where they can find you. Follow you.
DJ Prince Vibes on Instagram. That's what it is.
Better book him, Dano. Yeah, right now.
Book him. I can't wait. We have our conversation with Prince.
Oh, man.
It's gonna be. Yes. I've been waiting on that.
Hey, you know what? This is what happens when you have that kind of energy. You it gravitates. You see what I mean? And that's the kind of energy, level of energy that we have towards Pharaoh's Conclave. And we thank you so much for being on the show this morning.